Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We are past the halfway point in the agonizing wait that is spring training. There are only 15 days now separating us from the start of the 2018 Major League Baseball season. We are 19 away from the home opener at Miller Park between your Milwaukee Brewers and the St. Louis Cardinals. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and joining me are the guys who have watched this team begin to take shape down in Phoenix, Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak. You guys have produced a ton of content that we can find at jsonline.com, including kind of an injury update to backup catcher Stephen Vogt, who had a little bit of a setback early in the week. He's had an interesting spring training. He's played the role of babysitter, we've seen, for Corey Knebel and his wife. He's demonstrated his basketball officiating knowledge in a pretty funny video. This guy has got to be, he's got to be the most fun guy on this baseball team, right? I'm going to be really bummed if he doesn't wind up making this roster.
Nah, I mean, he's a good guy. I would put him up there in terms of the most cooperative and pleasant to be around. We've really enjoyed our time with G-Man Choi, actually.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah, he's right up there. He got a great personality, can speak a little bit of English, even though he speaks mostly through his interpreter or his translator, however you want to say it. He finds a way to get his personality across, and he's got a good sense of humor. He was dancing in the clubhouse the other day. So we've had a good time talking to him, and the guy that I wrote a story about, a couple things about earlier in camp, John Perrin, who is now in minor league camp, but when he was with the major league team over on the other side, he was a pure delight to talk to. Guy knows everything about everything and makes you feel like you're wasting your life if you're not doing 100 different things and getting financial investor licenses and going to law school and, oh yeah, pitching in Major League Baseball too. So he's a lot of fun also.
You do realize it's entirely possible that you are in fact wasting your life.
Yeah, no comment, but. Okay.
There have been plenty of roster-related developments as well since we last chatted a couple weeks ago. We had our first round of cuts, a couple injuries, including Stephen Vogt that I mentioned there. We can talk about some signings elsewhere in Major League Baseball that are interesting and have gotten the attention of Brewers fans. We'll talk about all that stuff, but we're going to start with the announcement by Brewers manager Craig Counsell that Chase Anderson will be the team's opening day starter in San Diego. Really not a surprise, given kind of who we've penciled into the rotation at this point in the season. He certainly was the best guy still standing from last year. But he is kind of an amazing story. I mean, as I recall, there was some question as to whether or not he would even break camp last year. And it really came down to an injury to Matt Garza that sort of sealed the deal and allowed him to get that fifth spot in the rotation. And then he just rose up through the ranks. You know, he just ascended as the year went on. He added velocity. He became a very trustworthy pitcher to the point that he is the guy you would definitely turn to at this point as the starter on opening day. Do I remember that correctly? Is that true? And do you guys look at Chase Anderson as a candidate for regression a little bit? Or has the string of success that he's had been too long where we shouldn't even expect a backslide?
Well, you do have it right, JR, that Chase was hanging on the fringe of the rotation as the team broke camp last year, and Garza did, I think, strain groin. Does that sound right?
And, yeah, there were a lot of injuries. They're hard to keep track of.
But, he got in there. Considering he missed 6 weeks himself with an oblique injury, of all things swinging the bat in Cincinnati, his numbers were quite remarkable. And, with all the chatter in the offseason about, are the Brewers after Yu Darvish? Are they after Jake Arrieta? And, David Stearns steadfastly shot down those rumors. People thought he was playing possum, but now we know that he was not, since those pitchers have signed elsewhere. One of the reasons is because they have a very high satisfaction or very high confidence in themselves to make their own pitchers better. Chase Anderson's way better than he was when he first came to the Brewers. Zach Davies also. Jimmy Nelson was having a breakthrough season last year when he hurt his shoulder, and unfortunately, you know, we don't know when he'll be back. You know, they've got a tremendous reclamation project in camp. Wade Miley, who was self-admittedly horrible the last couple of years in Baltimore. He led the American League in walks last year. He's throwing the ball great, has a real foot in the door on the rotation. So, you know, the outside world might not like the Brewers pitching, but inside their Maryvale Baseball Park address in downtown lovely Maryvale, Arizona, they have a lot of confidence in their pitching.
One of those homegrown guys is Brandon Woodruff, and when we went into the offseason, I sort of operated under the assumption that he would come back and have a spot in the starting rotation in 2018, especially when Jimmy Nelson got hurt. Now, that may not be such a safe bet. He pitched, we're recording this on Tuesday, he pitched pretty well Tuesday in the spring training game, but now I'm starting to think he's ticketed for AAA. I don't know how you guys, what you see for the plight of Brandon Woodruff here. I figured he was maybe even the fourth guy in the rotation, and then you see the sort of Brett Suter definitely emerging as somebody who's going to be in the rotation, maybe Wade Miley a little bit. What do you sort of make of Brandon Woodruff? Look at his numbers last year. I mean, where are we going? Where do you think he's going?
Yeah, we talked to Craig Counsell after the game yesterday, which should have been against the Dodgers. You know, he said pretty much that everybody that's fighting for a rotation spot that doesn't get a rotation spot, except for Aaron Wilkerson, is kind of, you know, up for the bullpen consideration anyway. The way we've been seeing things is Miley looks like he's one shoe-in for a rotation spot, and then Brent Suter probably would be the other one. You know, there's still time left in camp for that to change, but those two guys look like the most obvious guys right now. And, you know, where does that leave Junior Guerra? Where does that leave Brandon Woodruff? You know, they have options remaining, so it very well could be Colorado Springs, and I'm sure that wouldn't be the most welcome news for them, but it's depth for the Brewers. And as we've seen over the course of many seasons, you need that depth, and sometimes earlier than you think. And, you know, Junior Guerra was lost three innings into his opening day start last year. You know, injuries happen, so it's they're only a phone call away. Certainly, the Brewers have high expectations for Brandon Woodruff. He looked good today, like you said. He's a young guy. He's got a strong arm, and you know, he was talking today about his fastball command has been really good, which of course is the foundation for any successful pitcher. And he just needs to fine tune that off speed stuff. So he's definitely a guy that's going to be in the mix at some point this season. And I would expect him to have some sort of say in what happens with the Brewers rotation this season. It's just a matter of when.
Tom, last week, I think you tried to broadcast it loud and clear that the Brewers simply weren't going to be big players or aren't going to be big players in free agent pitching signings. Still, there was, you know, our eyebrows all went up when we saw the deals given to Jake Arrieta and Lance Lynn this past week, particularly for Lance Lynn, who only got 1 year, $12 million to pitch for the Twins. Arrieta got much more, but only a three-year deal, where I think some people would have thought it'd be a little bit longer heading into the offseason. What is your reaction to that? Do you think it says anything about how involved the Brewers would have been in chasing those guys for their starting rotation?
Well, what David Stearns has told us many times is they consider the cost of an acquisition against how much that acquisition will move the needle. So Arrieta and Darvish might have moved the needle, you know, considerably, but at what cost? Were they going to spend $144 million? I think if all of the option years, investing, and other clauses in Arrieta's contract, his is going to be about the same in the 130, 140. So I don't think the Brewers were ever wanting to spend $140 million on a pitcher. You know, if you could convince them they were one pitcher away from winning the World Series, they would probably pony up the money. But, you know, they're still trying to stick with their plan. They did better last year than people thought. Then they went out and got Yelich and Kane because, in their opinion, the offense is what let them down, not the pitching. And by the way, that's the correct opinion if you look at the statistics. know, they had trouble scoring runs. The pitching actually was what saved them and kept them in it as long as it, as they stayed in it. So we'll see. The one thing about the starting rotation is you're going to need more than five guys. You're probably going to need 10 or 12 guys. That's usually the way it works out over the course of a long season. So the top two or three guys that don't make the rotation out of camp, wouldn't surprise me if we see all of them in the first, month or two of the season. That's just kind of the way baseball works. So anybody that doesn't make the rotation and they don't funnel off until the bullpen, they're going to tell them to go to Colorado Springs and stay ready. That's easier said than done at that place. You know, it's not the greatest venue for pitchers, but they only got to stay there one more year, and then they're going to be moving elsewhere after this year. So.
I mean, this offense definitely has the opportunity to be really, really special. And one of the moving parts of that is Ryan Braun and working with him at first base. We talked a little bit about that on the last podcast. But then this week, he came out with some pretty definitive comments saying he was pretty uncomfortable playing first base, trying to make a transition from left field to first base and play there semi-regularly. It seems to me with 2 weeks to go before the season, when a player says that, especially someone who's a long-tenured veteran like Braun, says that definitively, I am still not comfortable here, that's kind of a pretty big indictment of the whole experiment, and it makes me wonder if that's it. Like, is this completely off the table now, or is this still something that is a work in progress that Ryan Braun is willing to keep taking steps forward through?
Well, I think it's still definitely on the table. And they're going to continue to roll him out at first base in the spring. But as we talked about after we talked to Braun that day, it's very seldom that you hear him come out and admit he's uncomfortable with anything, and let alone in such strong terms. So, he's letting everybody know that he is not comfortable, and there's going to be a transition period. But I think when push comes to shove, you'll see him over there. The only caveat to that is, if he starts having injury problems, the back has been mentioned several times. And, if he's taking a lot of ground balls or if he tweaks his back twisting or something like that, there's always a possibility that they decide, hey, maybe we should pull the plug if we can't keep him healthy over here either. But, and with the current configuration, the excess of outfielders, this is a way to kind of make it all work, at least part-time. And he's a good enough athlete that he should be able to do it. So, I haven't seen anything yet. I think Tom would agree that would indicate that they're ready to pull the plug on this anytime soon. I'm sure they'll check with him frequently, see how he's doing and everything. But he doesn't look that unnatural over there. It's not the easiest position in the world to play, and he is not. He may not feel totally comfortable, but he has not looked like a fish out of water. He made a nice play over there today, stabbing a line drive. I don't really see it as a huge deal, but things change obviously too. So definitely a situation worth monitoring. I'll just say that
if it's done anything, JR, it's dispelled the notion of many. And the incorrect notion of many that anybody can play first base. When I was young, you put the fat, uncoordinated kid out in right field, and now everybody thinks you can go to first base. And, we saw 1 year, Todd and I covered a Brewers team 1 year where I think Alex Gonzalez might have been the opening day first baseman that year, a guy that was a veteran shortstop. And they used like nine different guys that year.
Uni Betancourt, Blake Lally, Martin Maldonado. Who else are we missing? Juan Francisco. I mean, just go on and on and on. It was a train wreck for several years. Now they have multiple very good possibilities, choices to play over there. So it changed quickly. But like Tom said, it's not as easy as just throwing the big guy over at first base and letting him catch balls. You're worrying about cutoffs, you're worrying about where you're lining up with shifts, you're worrying about holding guys on, you're worrying about turning 3-6-3 double plays. There's a lot that goes into it.
I was always under the impression my little league coach put me in right field because he really liked my throwing arm, and I'm starting to doubt myself there.
Just keep telling yourself that.
You said at the outset, Stephen Vogt injured, possibly not going to be healthy in time for the start of the season. Seems logical to me. That's a pretty simple substitution that Jet Bandy is now the guy who's going to make it on this team as the backup catcher behind Manny Pena. I don't know if it's as cut and dried as that. I kind of would be interested to know what you think. And then there's a couple other injuries in there too. Zach Davies experienced oblique discomfort, which is a terrifying phrase that sends us all running for the exits. And fortunately, he seems to be okay and back to pitching a normal workload. Corey Knebel had a little bit of an injury scare. So what's the status there? Otherwise, besides Steven Vogt, it seems like it's been a pretty healthy camp.
We've been joking that Davies did actually have the first ever minor oblique. That's what it turned out to be. We rolled our eyes when they said it was minor at the start, because when was the last time you've seen that actually happen? But it looks like it was. So that's good news.
We've witnessed modern medical, you know, a marvel, right? I mean, it's something that you don't ever see. A guy having oblique. I mean, we just said earlier in this podcast that Chase Anderson missed 6 weeks with it last year. So, but he, you know, Zach, we were kidding with Zach. He only weighs like 150 pounds soaking wet. So, you know, he can't afford an oblique. You know, he can actually find his oblique. I couldn't find mine with the Hubble telescope.
Well, you can be serious. Corey Knebel pitched today, and he there were no issues with that knee. You know, you brought him up. Had to kind of fight through his inning, gave up a hit, run, walk, but got through it okay. And then the vote thing, you know, that bears watching. There's several different ways the team could go. You know, Bandy's on the roster. He was on the roster for a while last year. He'd be the easy choice if the Brewers either decide to cut Steven Vogt or start with the season with him on the DL. You know, Christian Bethencourt, I asked Craig Counsell about him today. He's actually having a pretty good spring. He's hitting really well, and he's kind of turned their head with the way he's performed. So, you know, they'd have to figure out a way to get him on the 40-man and everything. There'd be some juggling to do that. Or they could look outside the organization as well and try to upgrade. You know, we've been kind of postulating over the last 24 hours, you know, what we think is going to happen. And just guessing, you know, I think that the Brewers really value him enough. You know, the left-handed bat, the way he handles pitchers, certainly the presence in the clubhouse, that I think he's going to start the season on the DL and just kind of let him get healthy and, you know, bring him back when he's ready to go. And in the meantime, use a stopgap. Stick with Bandy. Maybe you can pick something up better out there. But I just think he brings too much to the table and at a pretty reasonable salary for what he provides to bring him back. Maybe Tom disagrees, but.
Besides, if he's off the next few weeks, he can referee in March Madness, as we saw on the video today. He looks ready to go.
And he can live in a van down by the river.
If you don't know what we're talking about, you have to check out the Milwaukee Brewers official Twitter account. They tweeted this out yesterday on Tuesday. Pretty amazing stuff. Steven Vogt, pretty amazing. All right, let's roll into some quick hitters here. Should we be concerned at all over Travis Shaw simply having his contract renewed? That's the terminology. A lot of players who are pre-arbitration will agree to terms with teams. They kind of come to an understanding as far as compensation goes. But with Shaw, they simply took last year's contract, rolled it over into this year. Should we be concerned that there maybe was a, I don't know if a disagreement is probably too strong, but they weren't able to come to some other understanding?
Well, it doesn't seem like it is. Travis didn't say, you know, that he thought there'd be any lingering ill feelings. You know, for those who aren't aware of how the Brewers and many clubs do pre-arbitration players, and that means people with less than 3 years experience in the major leagues, the club can set their salary. The club has, you know, the hammer, the financial hammer the first 3 years. Then it swings more towards the player. They have this statistical formula that they use, and you pick up points on this scale, and then when they're through adding up your points, they have a chart and they assign a salary to it. So there's no negotiations, JR. It's not like they sit down and say, okay, this is what we think. What do you think? They come to them and say, this is your salary. We figured it out on our formula. Everybody in the organization has the same formula. He probably fared a little better in the formula than most people did because he had 31 homers and 101 RBIs last year. But that's what it is. It's probably not a ton above what he was making last year. It's probably, you know, he made $500,000. So what the player can either agree, or as their own little form of protest over an assigned salary, they can refuse to agree. And in that case, the team renews them. We saw a few of those out there this year with other teams. The Brewers haven't done a ton of them in recent years, but that's part of the business now. And so when Travis Shaw gets the 3 years of service time, if he keeps hitting like this, he's going to get a nice raise when that year comes around.
Christian Yelich was getting some work in at right field. That would sort of be a necessary switch on days when Ryan Braun is still in left field. To me, it seems as simple. That is a simple maneuver that guys who can play left field can play right field. We've seen Jeff Jenkins do it. We've seen Ryan Braun do it. My understanding is that's a pretty easy thing. When you guys wrote about it, that's also sounded to be the case. Is it as smooth as it sounds?
At that level, I would say it's probably going to be a pretty seamless transition for most guys. Certainly easier than moving a guy from left field to first base, let's say, like Braun is trying to do now. But I mean, Yelich is a Gold Glove left fielder. I've watched him in the spring. He's looked totally comfortable, totally fine, totally smooth out there. You know, there's little things that I talked to him about that last week about the differences, and there's things, you know, reading the ball comes off the bat differently. You know, you're lining up a little bit differently, but you're still taking your cues from the center fielder in that spot. You know, he's got plenty of arm, it looks like. Made a really nice throw from the wall in the second base today. So I think it's really much ado about nothing. He's probably going to, you know, Craig Counsell has said he's going to play most of his time in left field this year anyway. So, you know, the whatever number of games he plays out there, 20 games or whatever, I don't see any reason to think that it's not going to work and work well.
We had our first round of cuts, a lot of guys that were really no surprises, a lot of guys who were ticketed for the minor leagues no matter what. Kind of a list of some pretty exciting names for the future, though, and I'm really curious if any of these guys are guys that you think are going to be playing at some point this season with the big league club. Specifically, I'm looking at Corbin Burnes, who is a kind of a dark horse candidate to even get into the rotation this year because they hadn't signed another free agent starting pitcher. Freddy Peralta, another pitcher, top pitching prospect, or Mauricio Dubon, an infielder who can play a couple different positions who has been pretty impressive since he was acquired by the Brewers last offseason. Do you think any of those guys are going to be here this year at any point?
Well, it's possible when you're in AAA. You're literally one call away. Dubon's a very talented middle infielder, so if the Brewers lost a middle infielder, they wouldn't hesitate to call him up. As far as Burnes and Peralta, they probably have the talent to do it, but truth be told, the Brewers would probably wish that they weren't coming to Milwaukee because that would probably mean four or five guys ahead of them have gone down. That would be a pretty high casualty list in their rotation. So, but they, you know, They were in camp for a reason, and they got a good look before they were cut, and they like them a lot. But they those guys, you know, Burnes is not far out of the draft. Peralta's only like 21. You know, they got him when he was 18 years old. So these guys, it's not going to hurt them to pitch a little bit more in AAA and get some experience. And a big catchphrase for the Brewers and most teams in general is preserving depth. That means having enough players in AAA to cover you if things bad happen at the big league level without a tremendous fall off in production.
So I know we're still a little ways away from meaningful baseball here, but from what you guys can glean, I mean, you mentioned Choi at the beginning of this broadcast. Do you think, is he the guy you would maybe classify as a surprise, a legitimate surprise in camp thus far? And other side of that coin, is there a player that maybe we should be concerned about a little bit?
I would say Choi definitely qualifies as a surprise, a pleasant surprise. Now, where does he factor in on opening day? He'll be in Colorado Springs. You know, that's just the way it is. But he's shown that he's got some pop as a left-handed hitter, a good teammate. He can play a little bit of left field if needed. I can't imagine that they would need any help there with the amount of depth that they have at the major league level. But first baseman, I mean, it's a guy that, you know, could have some use for them down, use to them, or be of use to them down the line. To me, that's the most obvious surprise candidate, I would say. Tom, do you have anybody that you're thinking of?
Well, not a surprise as far as we didn't know what he might do, but I think someone who I wrote about today, the Brewers' first round draft pick last year, Keston Hira. You know, he's normally he wouldn't be in camp this long. a year out of the draft, but they've needed some extra infield depth in camp, and so they've kept him. And it's let us get a longer look at him, and there's just nothing not to like about the guy. I've had a lot of fans, email me and tweet me and say, "Hey, any chance of him being the second baseman this year?" And so let's just say, whoa, Nelly, on that. He's not ready for that. But the plan is to send him to high Class A Carolina and then on to Biloxi if he does well in Carolina. That would put him a year plus out of the draft, knocking on the door of AAA the following season. That's pretty daggone good. The guy's 21 years old.
Right, and a guy when they drafted, they weren't even sure if he would need surgery or not. And look at him now. He's healthy and obviously making a ton of impact.
I don't know about – you mentioned the disappointments. Tom, is there anybody that's really stood out to you? I mean, I don't know if you could classify Giovanni Gallardo as a disappointment. I don't know what kind of expectations there were for him coming into the spring. You got to give the guy credit. He's been pitching in a different way up in the strike zone. Brewers asked him to try to do that. And he's struggled to this point. Yesterday we were told that he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen moving forward with the potential for it to change at some point. But with six spots in the bullpen pretty much already locked up, there's not much room in there for him. And they've got some pretty intriguing guys, pretty intriguing young arms like Taylor Williams behind him. In line for that spot, so I don't really see a clear path to him making the roster. Again, I don't know that that's necessarily a disappointment or a surprise or anything, but that's a guy that obviously is a pretty well known name in the franchise, and I'm sure some people were pulling for him to be on the team in some sort of capacity, but it doesn't look like the math probably is going to work out for him at this point.
All right, well, that will just about do it for us. Is there anything else that you guys are working on or have observed that you want to throw in here before we get out of here?
I don't think so. We've covered pretty much all the bases. So
we've had some good lunches lately in Maryvale. We had left hangs today. We had some good crab rangoon. That was nice. We made our first trip to In-N-Out yesterday on our way to
your first one.
Camelback Ranch. Yeah, we've been good. I've been trying to keep us on the health track, So we actually, by the time we got in the ballpark, the line was so long getting in, we got there a little bit late because of all the news in the morning and then the stop for the burgers. So they were pretty much cold by that point, but they're still, even cold, they're pretty darn good. So that's a positive. We've done well in the restaurant business here. Media is always concerned about food, so we've been enjoying that aspect of our job, that's for sure. But still staying within our expense account range, we've been asked. So don't worry about that.
A wink and nudge to anybody who works in the Journal Sentinel newsroom who might be listening. All right, gentlemen, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. Next time we chat, we'll be pretty close to opening day. We will talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Sounds good, JR.
Thanks, JR.
Take it easy.
The Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast is produced by me. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, your host. Thanks to Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak for joining me on the show again. Like I said, next time we talk, it will be mere moments, mere days before opening day as the Brewers get set to take on the San Diego Padres. We'll have a lot clearer picture of what the roster is going to look like, what the rotation is going to look like at that point. So we will definitely look forward to chatting again. In the meantime, check us out on iTunes. Rate us, give us a favorable rating, and check us out on all your various platforms, mobile devices. We are everywhere you want to find us. You should have no trouble finding us on the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk again real soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.